And I let it be. And so it is. Amen, amen, amen. Thank you, people. Thank you for joining in this prayer. I'm really grateful for that. And so, in that gratitude, I just, say thank you for being here. Thank you for taking part, and welcome to Gina. All right. Bye-bye, people. Till next week.
Hello, everyone. Here again this week. I'm assuming you all can hear me and are ready to go, huh? All right. I'm going to be reading from my book, In the World, But Not of It. And I'm going to be reading a section called Perfect Imperfection. You are both human and divine. You are divine perfection expressing as human imperfection, which itself is perfect. You were perfectly designed to be imperfect. Human imperfections are an intentional part of your design and will always be with you to some extent. I think this is such an important revelation, really. It was really quite a revelation for me because, and I think almost that this section was written for me, or it had a special meaning for me, because, and I think really for all spiritual people, this is a real stumbling block to think that we have to be perfect. And that was the old ego's thing anyway. In the past, we had to be perfect. And now that we're on the spiritual path, we still have to be perfect, according to the ego. So it seems that it's difficult to get away from the sense that we're not perfect enough and we need to be more perfect, and that somehow it's possible to be perfect. And that's the myth. That is the lie. And that is what this section is, that is what this message is about. That we are both human and divine. We're not just human. We're not just divine. We're both at the same time, simultaneously, always. So there isn't even a switching back and forth. One might be in the foreground and one might be in the background, but they're both still there. We can't help being human. And we are also divine, and that's the great good news and the great blessing and grace. Human imperfections stem largely from the ego, which is an essential aspect of being human that never completely disappears. The ego is not a mistake. It's meant to be part of the human experience. However, it's also intended that you evolve from expressing the ego to expressing your divine nature while retaining some remnant of the ego. So we were designed to have an ego. This is duality, after all, and the ego is part of that creation of duality. It would be impossible for us to experience duality, really, without the ego. So you could say implant. Doesn't seem very divine, but that divine implant that makes it possible for us to experience ourselves as a separate individual, looking out and seeing separate individuals and having an individual life. So the ego is not a mistake. But the task in our spiritual evolution is that we evolve from expressing the ego, that is, being the ego and being totally identified with the ego, to expressing our divine nature through the human form. And so as we express the divine nature, there will still be some remnant of ego as long as we are in a human body and in this realm of duality. These imperfections are the things you might judge about yourself and others. These are also things that cause suffering, such as the tendency to judge, to be unkind, to gossip, to be jealous or envious, to want to be right, to want attention, to control others, to compulsively think, to be addicted, to pretend to know, to be selfish or greedy, to blame, to be unaware of or insensitive to other people's needs and feelings, to be prejudiced, to be ignorant, to argue and compete with others. All the things you might be acknowledging when you shrug your shoulders and say, I'm only human. So these tendencies to be this way, this very human way, to pretend, to know, to be selfish, to be greedy, to blame, these tendencies stay with us. They are part of our human makeup. But what happens when we awaken and become more conscious of our divine nature is that we become aware of these tendencies. They are in the background. We notice them arising within us. We notice the thoughts that create these tendencies, that support these tendencies, and we don't give voice to them. We don't give them any power. We don't join with them, identify with them. And that's the only difference, really. Eventually, those thoughts and those tendencies will come up less strongly and less often, but there's always that potential to be selfish, to be greedy, to blame, to be prejudiced, to be jealous, envious, to want to compete with others. So our task is to just learn to notice these tendencies instead of instantly becoming them. And that's what the spiritual path is about. It's about becoming more established in presence, which is what can notice these tendencies. And once we notice these tendencies, we have a choice whether to indulge them or not. Because these human tendencies cause problems and pain, most people would prefer they didn't have them. And although your natural evolution is towards greater kindness, empathy, peace, love, wisdom, and other qualities of your true nature, which is perfect, as a human being, you will never reach such perfection, and you aren't meant to. To express the perfection of your divine self, the human self, doesn't have to be perfect. This should really come as a relief. And yet, somehow, I find it still very difficult to believe this. There's a part of me that says, no, wait. Are you sure I can't become perfect? Are you sure I can't get rid of this human self? It's, in a way, a bitter pill to swallow. Deep down, I think we all would like to be rid of these tendencies once and for all. But what we're really tasked to do is to learn to live with them without them being predominant and ruling our lives and being what shapes our lives. So we're talking about how do we exist as both a human self and a divine self. That is the work. That is the work of the spiritual path, how to exist as both, how to honor both. Because the tendency with some spiritual practices or paths or understandings is to think that we're supposed to somehow transcend the world. And people sometimes think that being in the world but not of it might mean transcending it altogether and just dropping out of it and not being concerned with it. But that's not what this instruction is about. This instruction is being fully in the world as the human you were designed to be, living fully this human life that you were given, that is a gift, but doing so in as elegant a way as possible, doing so in a way that expresses the divine as much as possible, and learning how to do that. We're here to learn how to do that. How do we become divine within this human incarnation? And that is what Jesus really came to show us, that it was possible. One of the most important messages I have to offer you is that it's okay for you to be imperfect. It's okay for you to be human. And it's impossible for you to be other than the way you are right now, although you will most certainly continue to evolve and become more Christ-like. It's impossible for you to be other than the way you are right now. This also should be a relief. And it is a relief when we hear this. It's okay for us to be exactly as we are right now. In fact, it's impossible to even think that we could be other than the way we are right now. And yet, we are continually evolving towards being more Christ-like. You may imagine that I was perfect and hold this up as a model, but you shouldn't be surprised if you or others don't live up to this imagined ideal. I was not perfect either. To some, this must sound like blasphemy, but it's hurtful to you and misleading for you to believe that you or anyone else can become a perfect human being. You can and will become a vehicle for expressing Christ consciousness in the world, but you will still have some human imperfections. So this message is to bring comfort to us. It's hurtful to us and misleading for us to believe that we can become a perfect human being. So this message that we've somehow gotten from spirituality, one way or the other, at least I know I got, and many, many people have gotten from the spiritual path, is mistaken. It's a myth. It's a myth that we can become a perfect human being. It's the myth of sainthood, really. And if you read the lives of the saints, what we do discover is they suffered greatly over their imperfections and did not consider themselves to be saints, did not consider themselves qualified to carry that name. As long as you are human, there will be some degree of pull from your programming into fear, anger, judgment, blame, hatred, self-doubt, jealousy, revenge, dissatisfaction, greed, and other human emotions and tendencies. The programming that makes you human is powerfully controlling. Until people begin to question their thoughts, they can't help how they behave. They will follow the dictates of their programming and instincts, not unlike animals. When that happens, you must forgive them, for they know not what they do. And forgive yourself as well. So that is how these human tendencies are experienced. They're experienced as a pull. They feel extremely compelling at times. And at those times when they're very compelling, we can hardly stop ourselves from responding to them and becoming the greedy human or the jealous human or the angry human or the victimized human. So the pull can be great. And along the spiritual path, as we progress, the pull to indulge in these things becomes less and less. that's the great reward that we do receive for our efforts, our diligence, and our sincerity as spiritual seekers in breaking through this programming, because it does take a certain amount of effort on our parts to wake up from this conditioning, to wake up from the ego and the programming that keeps these pulls in place and keeps them strong. And of course, the more we indulge in these pulls, the more they remain intact and strong. So every time we say no to expressing gossip or expressing a lie or some greedy tendency or jealousy, every time we turn away from that, we weaken that tendency, we weaken that pull. And this is how we become free, to the extent that we can become free of these human tendencies. And yet, those tendencies will still exist. And we have to be careful not to beat ourselves up for having the tendencies. And even when we indulge in them, we have to be careful not to attack or judge ourselves, because that isn't a helpful relationship to have. When Christ consciousness shines through the human self doesn't become perfect, but it can become a vehicle for good, at least temporarily, rather than something that serves the ego and its drives and agenda. For Christ consciousness to shine through you, your imperfections don't have to disappear. They simply need to be accepted. This doesn't mean indulging them, however. It means having compassion for them. By showering your imperfections with compassion, you become aligned with your divine self. Then those imperfections disappear for the time being. So this is interesting, that compassion and acceptance are how to deal with these imperfections. And of course, compassion and acceptance is the way, because compassion and acceptance can only come from your divine self. Whereas judgment and being angry at yourself for having these tendencies or for having indulged in these tendencies can only come from the ego. So in order to shift from ego identification to Christ consciousness, we have to move into acceptance and compassion towards our human tendencies and our human indulgences. And by that means, we're able to drop into presence. Compassion and acceptance, because they are qualities of the divine, qualities of presence, whenever we evoke compassion or evoke acceptance, whenever we choose compassion, choose acceptance, we drop into presence. And presence is the state in which Christ consciousness can come through us. Our divine self can be experienced. Many imagine that being in the world but not of it means transcending the world and the ego and no longer being touched by the difficulties of the human condition. But that is not what this means. Rather, being in the world but not of it means that you fully embrace the world of form and embrace being human while knowing you are beyond all forms. To do this, you have to first love the world, including your humanness. You have to do the opposite of what the ego does, which is reject the world. So This is very different than what we think of as removing ourselves from the world so that we can be pure and untainted by the world. The real task is to be in this world with our humanness, but be a divine conduit in the world, in our activities in the world. And the way to do that is we have to first fully love the world and fully love our humanness by accepting it. The ego rejects the world because it misperceives the world. When you stop seeing the world through the ego's eyes, you will love the world and know it as the magnificent creation and gift that it is. Then the perfection of your divine self can shine through your human self. You will be in the world, but not of it. So being in the world but not of it is a matter of being fully engaged with whatever life is bringing you, whatever is showing up in life, being fully engaged with it, saying yes to it, and all the while noticing perhaps the perceptions your ego might have, the negative perceptions it might have, the desires for it to be other than it is, noticing those things, but realizing that that is not the truth of the world. The ego misperceives the world. It thinks it should be different than it is. It should give me what I want. It should be this way. I should have this. My life should look like this. The ego can't possibly be happy when its perceptions are that. So we have to fall in love with the world as it is. That's the work, to love it as it is, to see the beauty in the way that it fall in love with it, with its beauty, with its perfection, with its miraculousness. It is such a miracle, and everyone knows what I'm talking about because everyone experiences the miraculous of the world when they just stop and really look and see what's in front of them. So this isn't really a hidden mystery. It's just covered over by all of the ideas about how we want life to look or how we want things to be or how we think they should be, which is the illusion. As long as you are in the world, as long as you are human, you will have some imperfections, issues, bad habits, and possibly addictions. These won't necessarily take you out of presence unless you judge your human self for having them and think they shouldn't be there. Rejecting, judging, or going to war with your human shortcomings is what keeps you separate from your divine self. When you do those things, you are identified with the superego. Only the superego would go to war with the ego, because doing that accomplishes what the ego wants. It keeps people identified with the false self. So it's interesting that we could have addictions and imperfections and psychological issues and bad habits, at least to some extent, and they won't necessarily take us out of presence unless we judge ourselves for them and think they shouldn't be there. These things do eventually evolve, and perhaps they will disappear or certainly diminish in our lifetime. But if they are there, they are there. It's one more thing that is just what it is. One more thing that needs to be accepted. And that acceptance allows these things to evolve and move on to be healed. Acceptance and awareness heals. Being aware of the imperfections, being aware of the thoughts and the drives behind them, accepting them, allows them to be healed. That may be counterintuitive. We think we have to do something. If there is something we need to do about them, that will arise in us naturally from our deepest self. If we need to go to therapy, if we need to do some counseling or work with some other healer, that will arise in us to do that. It will suddenly show up as aha, I need to do this. And a certain excitement and momentum will be behind that. This is how we evolve. We don't evolve by rejecting ourselves, by judging ourselves, by going to battle with ourselves. That is always the ego. It's called the superego. The superego is the aspect of ego that says should. You should be this way. The remedy is to become aware of the interplay between these two aspects of your ego and to instead accept your human self. The instant you offer acceptance to your human self, you become your divine self, because the only thing that can do this is the divine self. So again, aligning yourself with a quality of your divine self, like essence or love or compassion, will instantly drop you into the experience of the divine self. But you'll have to continue to experience that acceptance for a while to stay in the divine self. It can't be just a quick little flash of acceptance and then back in the ego's judgment. That's not really going to work. When you move into acceptance, you have to stay there. Stay there long enough to experience divine presence, and then the compassion and love and awareness and insight that can arise from that place of presence that can offer healing to the human self. Sometimes you will fall short of your spiritual goals and ideals. You will not be loving. You will not be compassionate. You will not be patient. You will not be tolerant. You will gossip, lie, exaggerate, judge, blame, and get irritated. You will falter. But once you see that you faltered and accept that, the slate is wiped clean. You are forgiven, and you can begin again. Forgiveness is automatic as soon as you see that you've made a mistake. The seeing of the mistake is the forgiveness. Accepting that mistake will allow you to forgive yourself and move on. You are always forgiven, but if you don't forgive yourself, you'll stay stuck in the ego. Accepting that you made a mistake and that doing so is human allows you to forgive yourself. In that moment of forgiveness, you become a channel once again for Christ consciousness. So this is one of the keys, forgiveness. Forgiveness allows us to put the mistake in the background, in the past, where it is, where it rightfully is. Everything we've ever done that was a mistake is finished. It's over. And to do anything but move on from that makes no sense whatsoever. Keeping ourselves stuck in judgment over ourselves, over something we've done in the past, only keeps us stuck in ego and blocks us from being a channel for Christ consciousness. So forgiveness is essential, of course. And another key point, I think, in this is that it says accepting that you made a mistake and that doing so is human. So what is important here is that our mistakes are not personal. We are not personally flawed. Our humanness is flawed, but it isn't our fault that we are human and we have these imperfections. If we take it personally, if we feel like we are inferior, that is just more identification with the egoic self. The egoic self is unworthy. So to move out of this unworthy egoic self, it helps to realize that these flaws are not personal. They are impersonal in that they belong to all of humanity. They are part of us because they have to be part of us. They cannot help but be part of us. As a human being, we're all given the same flaws. And seeing that these flaws are not personal is what allows us to touch them with acceptance and compassion and forgiveness. If we tell ourselves that we are bad because we did such and such, then we're going to hang on to that badness as part of our identity, our egoic identity. We're going to own it as a personal problem. So understanding that our imperfections are not personal. I have them, you have them, every human being who's ever been alive on this planet has these same imperfections. We were born with them. It's not our fault. And that is not an excuse to indulge them, of course, but it is all the more reason to bring forgiveness and acceptance to them and compassion. And to give this compassion to other people as you see them indulging in their imperfections, when you see them behaving greedily or selfishly or jealously, if you can view them with forgiveness and compassion and understanding that they are suffering from this very human experience we all are suffering from, then you can let them be without you getting triggered, your own ego getting triggered and pulled into judgment. Because we can't really help people from a place of ego and judgment. We can only help people from a place of acceptance, compassion, and forgiveness. Because that's what heals. The divine self is what heals the human self. So we have to move into our divine self to heal our human self and to help others heal from their human imperfections. If you have a negative tendency, such as judging or gossiping, do your best to not indulge in this. But if you do, acknowledge that you've made a mistake. Accept that, have compassion for this human tendency, forgive yourself, and ask others for forgiveness if necessary. Then you will drop back into presence, Christ consciousness. To judge or berate yourself only keeps you separate from your divine self. Before you can accept an imperfection, which stems from an imperfect thought, such as a judgment, you first have to become aware of that thought. That awareness is the beginning of disidentification from the ego. That little step back achieved by witnessing thought is the beginning of realignment with the divine self. This is exactly what is practiced in meditation. You become aware of a thought. You accept that it's there, and you forgive it and yourself for having it. Doing that allows you to return to presence. This is the way from imperfection to perfection. There is no need to do away with imperfection. All that's needed is the right relationship to your imperfections. That relationship is one of acceptance. And that makes it possible to reunite with your divine perfection. The divine is deeply in love with the human just as it is, because the divine created the human to be just as it is. To me, this last statement is very healing, because so many of us grew up with an idea of the divine or God as not being so accepting, not being particularly forgiving. Of course, Jesus came to give us the message of forgiveness, to correct those misperceptions about God that people had. I'm going to read that last sentence again. The divine is deeply in love with the human just as it is, because the divine created the human to be just as it is. And if we can just allow ourselves to feel this total love and acceptance of that the divine has for us, that will help us stay present, be present, and fall in love and know the divine in this world. Acceptance is the bridge that takes you from the human condition of suffering to the freedom and love of your divine nature. Without acceptance, you're stuck in the ego and the suffering it creates. With acceptance, the ego is allowed to be as it is, while recognizing that you are not the ego. You accept that you have an ego that causes suffering, but you also know that who you are, in essence, is divine. That mysterious essence is what sees the truth about the ego. So our development as spiritual beings is one of really coming to grips with our dual nature, of really seeing that we have this dual nature. We have both an egoic self and a divine self. And learning to be in relationship to that egoic self from the divine self is the work of the spiritual path. Then, after accepting and forgiving your humanness, there's one more very important thing to do. Don't go back to the thought stream. Stay in presence by staying in your body and senses and noticing the vast spaciousness from which you're looking, hearing, sensing, and experiencing. Notice it and sink into it. Remain in it. The only thing that can take you out of presence is the voice in your head. So I mentioned this earlier. When you are accepting and forgiving and experiencing compassion, let yourself really feel that for a while. Drop into it, sink into it, experience it in your body. Don't just quickly skim over it. The tendency would be so easily to go back into the mind. Use acceptance, compassion, and forgiveness as a bridge to go more deeply into presence and to stay in presence for longer and longer periods of time, because that will allow you to become an expression of Christ consciousness, to be a channel of Christ consciousness. Because we are essentially either channeling our ego or channeling the divine. We mostly don't feel like we have a choice until we become more conscious and awake and aware. Then we begin to have more choice about whether we're channeling our ego or channeling the divine. The longer you stay in presence, the more this spacious sense of your divine self opens up, and you discover how very satisfying and complete it is. To be happy, you don't need what the ego thinks you need. The joy of pure existence is there whenever you turn the spotlight of your attention onto it and keep it there long enough for the divine self to open like a flower and release its fragrance. The proof that you're not the ego, which is why you are able to accept the ego, is that you are aware of the ego. What is aware of the ego cannot be the ego. Just as the eye can't see itself, the ego can't see itself. Only something outside the ego can see the ego. You are able to be aware of what is going on within the human condition because you are not only human. And that is such wonderful news, because as difficult as it is to be a human, we are not actually that. And the more and more we can join with our divine self, the more wonderful life becomes. Then we really do fall in love with life, and we want to serve life. We want to be fully in the world and not run away from it. Really, the ego only wants to run away from the world because the ego makes the world so awful. It makes life so awful by what it says about being alive. You are, in fact, what is aware of everything. Thoughts, feelings, desires, intuitions, the sense of aliveness and existence, drives, urges, inspiration, and everything in the external world that is brought to you through the sense organ that is your body-mind. This awareness is perfect, unadulterated, and cannot be harmed by any imperfection. Nothing your human self has ever done has harmed the perfection of your divine self. When you're in touch with this perfection and know yourself as this, you act accordingly in peace, love, and kindness towards all. When this perfection infuses and is expressed through the human self, it is very beautiful indeed. But this doesn't do away with the ego, which will rise again and seek expression. Then awareness, acceptance, compassion, and forgiveness of the ego are called for again. This is the dance between the human self and the divine self that continues moment to moment. Always you, the one awakening from the egoic trance, must choose what you will express, who you will be in that moment. Will you be the ego-dominated human self or the divine-infused human self? With practice, choosing the divine self becomes much easier, but that choice must still be made. That choice eventually becomes habitual, as ego identification was once habitual. But even then, the ego still exists in potential. So notice this said, will you become the ego-dominated human self or the divine-infused human self? So the option was to be a divine-infused human self, not to be the divine. All we can really experience of the divine is what our human self is capable of experiencing. This is a limited perceptive mechanism that we own, this body-mind. And we experience life through this human instrument. And we experience the divine through this human instrument. So we are limited to some extent by this human instrument. Who knows what the divine will be experienced as when we are no longer in this instrument? we will see. Being in touch with perfection or presence is also the secret to happiness. When you're in presence, enjoying life is natural because you have no judgments or desires for life to be any different than it is. When you have no judgments or desires, your circumstances can't upset you. You just enjoy life as it is. You fall into the moment. You lose your egoic self, and that's enjoyable enough. It's impossible to be ego-identified and to be truly happy, except briefly, because the ego is the manufacturer of discontentment. And by definition, you can't be happy when you're discontent. Unless you accept life just as it is, you can't enjoy it because you're too busy resisting or trying to change it. When you stop having that kind of relationship with life, you drop into presence and experience the natural enjoyment of the Divine Self. The Divine Self is glorying in its creation, every aspect of it. It loves the puddles, the rainbows, the garbage, the feasts, the broken things, and the shiny and new things equally. To the Divine Self, there is no difference between these. They are all rejoiced in. To the Divine Self, everything is good. Everything is the Beloved, all part of itself, its own creation. So that is the experience of the Divine. And I bet that many of you know what that feels like. Everything is good. Everything is the Beloved, all part of itself, its own creation. When you can gaze upon life and feel that way, you are home. You are aligned with the Divine Self. And then if you can move in life while holding on to, continuing to experience that love of everything, then you will express love and wisdom in everything that you do. So we can go very deeply into the Divine, into presence. It's possible for us to express Christ consciousness. And we may not do it in every moment, but there can be many, many beautiful moments, especially when we give ourselves in service. That's when we can feel it especially easily. When we give ourselves in true service, the Divine uses us as an instrument, and we feel that love for all, that connection with all, that awe of life and awe of the beauty and perfection of it. And we're glad to be part of this crazy dance. So we can hold the ego's points of view lightly. Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy. We can hold it lightly. If the ego felt this way about life, there would be nothing to desire, nothing to fear, and no better future moment to strive for. In other words, there would be little left of the ego, because you could say that desiring, fearing, striving, and looking to the future are the ego. If you were to cease doing these things, you would be in presence, and the ego would lose its power and place. The ego would still be there in the background, creating a sense of individuality so that you didn't fall into the oneness and forget you were playing at being a human being. All the ego is really needed for is that. Now I'm going to skip ahead a few pages since we still have a little more time. Being in the world but not of the world is the experience of presence. It is being fully human while also being fully divine. This is not a dry or detached place, but an intimate, all-embracing, and in love with the world place. The experience is one of being fully involved in one's human life, while not being unduly influenced by the ego's perceptions or upset by the comings and goings in life. Because that is how the ego spoils it all, isn't it? It has certain perceptions that life shouldn't be the way it is. And so it gets upset by the comings and goings in life. It has anger and irritation and sadness over the comings and goings in life, which are just natural, which we have as humans no control over. We only have so much control, it's really not very much. The ego imagines that it has so much more control over life than it actually does. I think as all of us age, it's one of the things that we do discover is that we only have so much control over how our life turns out. It's not so much in our hands as we might think when we were younger. We think we can make it happen a certain way, make it look a certain way. But no, life has its own ideas and its own plans. And we have to come to grips with that somehow. We have to move out of that egoic perception of control and need to control and desire for control and drop into this mystery, into this river of life, and allow it to take us where it's taking us, because it will take us where it wants to go. And we have a little bit of say within that river of life. We have some say. We have some choice. In one of my books, I always remember a phrase that struck me. So it said, God gives you a tiny paddle. And that is how it is. It's a tiny paddle in the river of life. To be able to embrace everything in the world, it's necessary to be not of the world, meaning not of the ego, which rejects the world because the world doesn't satisfy its expectations. Not being of the ego means not expecting the world of form to make you happy. Not having this expectation frees you from needing to have the world to be a certain way. This is interesting. I want to repeat this. I've sometimes sat with this sentence myself because it seems important. Not being of the ego means not expecting the world of form to make you happy. It really made me realize how much I do expect, the human self, expects the world to make me happy, as if I'm the center of the universe, right? The ego is the center of the universe, and all of life is designed to make me happy. So what if you did not expect the world of form to make you happy? Not having this expectation frees you from needing to have the world be a certain way. And when you're free from needing to have the world be a certain way, then it can just be as it is. And the funny thing is that's when you can actually be happy. When you can just let the world be as it is. That's the secret to happiness. Isn't it crazy that we're programmed to believe that happiness comes from getting the world to be like we want it to be, when in fact, happiness comes from not needing it to be a certain way, from just letting it be as it is. Because then you can walk with lightness on the earth. You can be in the world, embrace it, and enjoy it fully just as it is. Because your happiness is derived from something much deeper, from presence. So when you let life be just as it is, that is the relationship to life that the divine has. So if you move into relationship of allowing life to be as it is, you have just joined with your divine self. And when you are aligned with your divine self, when you are an expression of your divine self, you experience happiness that is deeper than any worldly happiness, than any happiness that can be gotten from getting something outside yourself. So we gain the world by losing the world, by losing our attachment to having the world be a certain way. We gain the world, we fall in love with the world. Being in the world but not of it, being in presence is natural. Everyone knows what presence is. Everyone has experienced it. It is mysterious and yet most ordinary because it's always here. It's the only thing that is always here. Everything else comes and goes within the spacious awareness that you are, which is presence. Does it seem strange to say that everything comes and goes in you? It's a radical idea, isn't it? That you are everything and that there is nothing other than you here. This is not the you that you think of yourself as, of course, but the you that everyone is. The oneness that expresses itself in everything. This is the oneness known by mystics. Oneness is the truth about life, but it is hidden by the forms of this life. Oneness is often called the formless to distinguish it from form, but form and the formless are one and the same. Form is not separate from the formless, which gives birth to form and expresses itself through form. Form and the formless are intertwined and inseparable. Presence is the experience of the formless, the timeless dimension in which you as a separate self do not exist. And yet there is a form that claims to be you. You exist as both form and the formless. This primary duality, which I've been calling the human self and the divine self, is at the core of who you are. And so that is where I will end it for today, pretty much on time. And so I thank you all for being here. And as I said last time, if you have any questions that you'd like me to answer for you, I can answer them through email. Just email me the question and I'll write you back. So my email is Gina, G-I-N-A, at radicalhappiness.com. So, all right then, I shall turn the mic over and thank you so much for being here. I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. As Cheryl has just said, after my teaching today, we will close down for Thanksgiving.